Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me, because this is such a great opportunity. Each week, for an hour, I get to have the most amazing conversations with people from all over the world that really are supporting us in our growth, in our understanding of our health, of our well-being, of what's going on in the world, so we can make the most informed decisions possible regarding our overall well-being. And I hope you'll be joining my community if you're listening for the very first time. And to do that, just go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know. Like me over there. That's What Women Must Know. Or you can go to my website, which is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and that's Dr. CherylSelman.com, and opt in there, and then all the shows get sent directly to your inbox. In fact, I have another show on Progressive Radio Network every week on Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. It's called The Love Code, and The Love Code is a show that's all about the heart, all about the spirit, all about healing and transforming ourselves and our lives. So I hope you'll be listening to both of my shows every week. And you don't want to miss out, because there's such valuable information that's being shared with my guests. And a couple of announcements before we jump into the wonderful conversation I have today. First announcement is that every year for the last 6 years, I have been taking a small group of people to Costa Rica to experience a healing retreat at a center called Rhythmia. And Rhythmia is unique because it's the only medically licensed plant medicine center in the world. And Rhythmia is all about working with plant medicine, particularly working with plant medicine that is getting a lot of notoriety these days, called ayahuasca. And I've had previous guests talk about the benefits and the healing that comes from the gift of this unique Amazonian plant. And because I have been there many years and had done many, many journeys with the plant medicine, and there's so much research going on now about how plant medicine can profoundly heal traumas, can help rewire our brain in new ways that actually allows us to live life in a much more harmonious and empowered way. It's like a journey with ayahuasca is like 10 years of psychotherapy, I have found personally. So I have witnessed miracles of healing, of transformation, of healing past wounds, of healing chronic illnesses, of healing just anything possible, and opening up to a greater connection to our spirit. So it's a true holiday, because it's a holiday from our wounds, a permanent vacation. And if you are interested in joining me, this will most likely be the last trip I'll be taking to Rhythmia, and they have given my group a very special discount. So if you are drawn to a quantum leap in your consciousness, in your healing, then May 9th through 16th is the week that I will be taking my group, which has been offered this very special discount. And you can find out more about this by going to rhythmia.com and calling them or contacting me. And at drs@drcherylselman.com. And if you are called, then please investigate and come along. And Rhythmia, by the way, is R-Y-T-H-M-I-A, R-Y-T-H-M-I-A. It's an amazing, amazing place in Costa Rica. So that's my first announcement. I have a second announcement. For the last 2 years, I have been involved in the creation and the formulation of a very special new product for addressing specific a unique women's health problem, put it that way. And I am talking about the problem that I have seen in my practice for years and years, and it's a personal issue. It's very personal for women, because it's about vaginal atrophy, which means vaginal dryness, drying out of the mucosal membranes in the vaginal tract, and it can create a lot of discomfort. It can open to more serious health problems like urinary tract infections, and can make having sex really painful. So I have formulated with like six natural ingredients, all natural, to help heal, repair, regenerate. And it's a suppository called Hygiena, Hygeena. It's an amazing product. There is no other solution available with the ingredients that work synergistically to heal, repair, and regenerate, which is why I have formulated this product, so I couldn't find anything without hormones. You don't need hormones to be able to address and restore the healthy tissue in the vaginal tract. So if you'd like to learn more, because I am launching it and there's a special price, and all you need to do is go to my online store at drcherylsilman.com, and you can learn more about it. You can opt in to my website, because I'll be sending out more information about what it is, and it's incredible. It's just been, I've given it to people, to patients and friends who've had really severe problems that nothing could resolve in this area, and they just have rave reviews how it changed their lives. So check it out. It's called Hygiena, Hygeena. To learn more, go to my website, drcherylsilman.com, and there is a special discounted price as we are offering an introductory promotion for Hygiena. So hope you'll be checking it out, and if you or someone you know is dealing with this issue, then this is the most amazing solution that I have come across. So there you go. Those are the big announcements. So let's get into my guest. So as many of you may know, I am here in Australia, my second home, or soon to be my first home, and I have been meeting some amazing people down under that I really wanted to introduce my audience to, and also have them share the amazing work that they're doing. So today we're going to be talking to Emily Ryan, and Emily Ryan is the founder of RowdyRoo.com.au, and this online business is working with organic cotton products for children's clothing. And I found out about Emily because I have a newborn great-nephew, and I was looking for something to send to him that was Australiana. I really like to support what people are doing down here. And that's how I was introduced to Emily and her amazing company that is dedicated to using organic cotton for their products. So I'm really intrigued. I've been intrigued about the organic cotton story because there's so much that is being said about organic products in general, but specifically in hearing about, you know, things labeled organic cotton. I don't know anything about the cotton industry and what's going on. So Emily knows all about it. And let me just share a little bit about Emily, and then we'll bring her on. Emily Ryan is a journalist of more than a decade's experience who has recently launched her own organic cotton baby and kids clothing label called Rowdy Roo. I love that name, Rowdy Roo. She is the mother of two IVF miracles, Stella 5 and Rowdy 2, and an accidental convert to natural and gentle parenting. So having said all that, it's my pleasure to welcome Emily to the show today. And Emily, hello, and welcome to What Women Must Know.
Hi, Dr. Cheryl. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, it's so nice to have met you and to have you here now as a guest. And I'm intrigued about a few things, and I thought, well, let's start talking about the organic cotton story, because I did a little research about the cotton world and the organic cotton world, and there's a lot that people don't know about the cotton industry. And before we even get into the organic cotton industry, one thing I learned, just to kind of start the conversation off, in doing my research about, I know that Australia grows a lot of cotton. So I was looking at Australia, and the organic cotton growing in Australia, and I learned there is no organic growing cotton in Australia. Now, Australia has a lot of organic products, and there's a huge demand for organic products in Australia, but there's no organic cotton. I thought that was quite interesting. I was shocked, actually. I was shocked. So let's talk about what you have learned in your research on designing your baby clothing line through the eyes of the, you know, the cotton world. So what do we need to know about, let's talk about the traditional way cotton is grown and some of the concerns, and we'll move into organic cotton.
So like you, I was extremely shocked to learn that Australia did not have a single organic cotton farm among the 1,500 farms that are here, predominantly in New South Wales, the state that I live in. And like you said, organics are something that it's something that's just more and more critical to everybody. And I think particularly parents of small children, because we are just so responsible for everything that goes into our children's bodies, everything that our children are wearing. So for me, I mean, organics is imperative when it comes to what I'm providing my children with. So I mean, I went into this project basically because I have a friend who's an incredibly talented artist. We both share a love of Australiana, and we both feel really strongly about natural products. And so for us, an organic cotton Australiana baby line is the way we wanted to go. And so to then find that I could not, in fact, source my organic cotton locally, it was a little bit of a shock to me. A lot of the research I did was through Australia's peak cotton industry body, which is called Cotton Australia. And so according to Cotton Australia, the reason that there is no organic cotton in Australia, although a couple of farmers have dabbled in the past, they just found it inefficient and it's just not commercially viable for them here. Australia is a country where we experience fairly extreme weather events, and it's also a country where we experience drought. And cotton's a very water-intensive product, and so when you combine all those risk factors with the risk that the cotton growers see with pests, they just feel that in the Australian terrain, they can't take the risk of not using pesticides. And so while I come from a farming community, while I can understand their viewpoints from that perspective, my personal choice for my family is organic cotton, and so I had to look elsewhere for my organic cotton.
So Emily, because you've done the research and you looked into this cotton industry, you know, when people are making choices, do they want, and we'll talk about where organic cotton is grown. But before we do that, let's talk about the cotton growing industry, because there are a lot of concerns about cotton. Of course, you know, in the United States, there's such a long and sad history of cotton. It's part of the slave history of the United States, supported the cotton industry for a long time in the United States. And it, from what I understand, was such a grueling form of crop to grow. It was like just painfully difficult for people who were harvesting it. What did you find out about how the traditional form of cotton farming goes? What do we need to know about the cotton industry?
Well, for me, it's two things. Firstly, you need to understand that just because a label says organic cotton on it, it doesn't necessarily mean that the garment is made of pure organic cotton. Unfortunately, in Australia in particular, we have about six different bodies that regulate organic standards. There's not an overarching body that controls it. So the garment may just contain fragments of organic cotton, and not, in fact, the pure organic cotton, which is why I always make sure to clearly label my garments as 100% organic cotton or pure organic cotton, just so that the consumer is aware that they are receiving a garment that is entirely made of organic cotton. The second thing is that there are certain certifications for organic cotton that luckily are international standards. And so those are the standards that I make sure that my garments adhere to. I think the most important of those is the Global Organic Textile Standard, GOTS. So they're the peak body that monitor the organic textile industry, and they're very strict in terms of what they allow the garment to contain. So, for example, if your product is GOTS certified, it doesn't just mean that the garment, the cotton is organic. Organic, everything down to the zipper, the little details, the thread that it's sewn with, all of it has to adhere to the organic standards. And so this means there can be no use of toxic and non-biodegradable chemicals, heavy metals, or chlorine bleaching. And all the processes, right from the farm until it arrives at your doorstep, have to be environmentally sustainable.
Wow, sounds like a lot of hoops to go through.
Yeah, and on top of that, we actually have a new line of clothing coming out in late March, and I provided you some photographs of this line. It's for older children, so we've got some T-shirts, and they have a print on the front. And, I mean, that's a fairly common style of T-shirt. You know, a T-shirt with a character on the front. I don't know if I'd ever thought about it too much, but, I mean, essentially, that's a kind of paint on the front of your shirt, and we need to make sure that that is organic as well. And so that's a completely different standard. That's the OKIO Tech Standard 100, and that means that there are no toxic chemicals involved in the printing of that design onto our T-shirts. So it's every step of the way in creating organic garments, you need to make sure that all these boxes are ticked, because you're not dealing with just one person to supply these products to you. You're dealing with multiple suppliers and supply lines, and it's really important as a person who owns a business and is promoting themselves as organic that you're really familiar with these standards and that you are making sure that these boxes are ticked. When we were launching our baby clothes business, it took us about a year to find a manufacturer that we were really happy with and that was providing us with all of the certifications that we required. I mean, there was actually a factory that appeared to provide us with the certifications, and we pulled production at the 11th hour because luckily our agent, who is highly experienced in the field, just noticed one of the certifications had actually expired the year prior. And for me, that was enough to not proceed, because I'm very passionate about what I do, and I feel that my consumers are paying for a certain standard and they're expecting a certain standard, and so I need to make sure that my garments adhere to that standard.
Well, I certainly acknowledge you for that level of commitment to purity. I just want us to go back to raising cotton, because I just think there – most people haven't a clue how cotton is grown and what are some of the problems associated with the way cotton is grown. Mm-hmm. I know that there is a huge, 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 what's the name of that big property up in the Northern Territory here that's just gigantic, that is catching all the water up in the Northern Territory to grow cotton, and I think it's like half owned by the Chinese, which, you know, we all are concerned about that. But what is that property? Do you know about that one?
Oh, look, I know
about capturing all the water.
But yeah, I mean, water is one of the main issues with growing cotton. I know the property that you're talking about. And I mean, like, according to Cotton Australia, which is the peak body here in Australia, the average irrigation requirement is 6 to 7 megalitres per hectare. I mean, I know it's hard to quantify something like megalitres, but that is a huge amount of water. And so, you know, in a drought-prone country like Australia, to use that amount of water for something that is not feeding the population, I mean, that's a significant investment in a resource, isn't it? And so, I mean, that's another thing I feel strongly about in terms of garments, because we all know that fast fashion is one of the highest contributors to global warming. The amount of resources that go into making clothing, they're high. And you know, as a person who sells clothing, I'm very aware of that, and I'm very aware of my responsibilities in that area. And so that's why I believe that, you know, if you're going to buy something, we all need to just basically be making sure that we're buying something that's going to last, something that's quality, something that you're going to use, hand down from child to child and then hand down to your friends' children. Don't buy things that you know, you see in a you know, in an American Walmart or an Australian Kmart for, you know, $2 each. You really need to ask yourself, how has that garment been manufactured? And if it's fast fashion, is it going to be something that lasts very long, or are you then going to dispose of that garment that has cost the earth quite significant resources to make?
It's so important to understand the whole cycle. The other question I have, in the growing of cotton, I would imagine there's high use of pesticides, herbicides, insecticides that can be so damaging for the environment. And so let me just start and stop there and address that issue, and I have another question.
Yeah, so I mean, that's basically what I found when I was investigating organic cotton sourced from Australia, which unfortunately there is none. I mean, I'm sure you've learnt, Dr. Sherrill, from your frequent visits here down under, that unfortunately it seems we have a large amount of critters that like to bite or otherwise attack us here in Australia. And the cotton farmers seem quite united in Australia in believing that they can't sustainably grow cotton without pesticides. And for me, my choice is then to not source that cotton. So my investigations have shown me that two of the biggest manufacturers of organic cotton are, as you alluded to previously, the United States, but also India. And from what I've read, it has to do with the terrain, and it also has to do with, I guess, just the different pests that are local to the area, and the fact that the farmers in the area feel that they can use other means to deter the pests rather than the harmful pesticides.
Yeah, so that's so interesting, isn't it? Because if we talk, and we're going to talk about where you sourced your organic cotton, but the fact that you can grow cotton organically is a reality. It's not that it's impossible. It's just choices that people are making and what they're willing to invest in with their products. So let's talk about India. Let's talk about what they have created and how big that industry is. And I know that's where you, unfortunately, you couldn't source anything in Australia, so you had to find another avenue if you wanted to pursue the organic cotton dream that you had. So let's talk about organic cotton growing in India, and if you have any idea of what they specifically do to ensure the organic side of cotton farming.
Well, in the cotton that I've sourced from India, I mean, I had to make sure, as I alluded to earlier, that I sourced it through a supplier that adhered to the global organic textile standard. So the fact that there are farms out there in countries all over the world that adhere to this one standard, I think, is really fantastic, and it's really great for everyone. My main concern with India and the cotton that I was sourcing there was not just the organic side of things, but also the ethical side of things. My husband, Lendl, he was born in India. He immigrated to Australia with his family when he was 5 years old. And so my husband and my children have Indian heritage. We have visited India. If it were not for the pandemic, we would have been probably visiting our factory, the manufacturer, this year. But it's very important to me, in a country where, you know, I feel that there is a risk of exploitation to workers, that I only work with suppliers and manufacturers that aren't going to just guarantee me that my product is organic, but also that it is ethically made. And so that was able to be done by finding a supplier that adhered to the SA8000 certification, which is an international certification, which basically complies with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and International Labour Organization conventions. So this means that the workers picking the cotton and also the people in the factory who are manufacturing the garments, they're protected from things like forced and child labour. They must have access to a living reasonable wage and work hours. They must have health and safety practices. They have the ability to join a union. And unfortunately, in a lot of the garments that are sold in Australia and the US, they are made by people who do not have access to these kinds of working conditions, which is very sad.
Well, it is sad because there's been so much abuse by so many of these industries. So you have to first find a really good, truly organic cotton product. Then you have to find a company that is really abiding by these international standards that create humane working conditions in India, which is, I would imagine, not an easy thing to do.
No. Look, it was a process. We were very much aided by our agent, who is actually my husband's uncle. He has 40 years experience working in the textile industry, including in the field of organics. So we did have a fairly good person on our side to help us navigate this quite complex process. But, you know, like I said, we did have a few difficulties at first in terms of finding the right fit, but it was not a process that we were going to hurry. And I was actually really heartened once we found the manufacturer that we did to find out that, you know, because demand is growing in this area, people are rising to meet that demand. You know, India is a rapidly developing country and people over there are, you know, they're part of the global community and they are realizing that they have a right to all of these same rights that we enjoy here in the West. And I just really feel good that we're able to empower the people that we're employing and providing a living wage to stand up and say, no, this is the standard that we deserve in terms of our employment. And I feel really good about that.
So where in India is your factory?
So it's in southern India. The city is called Tirupur. So Tirupur is about a 5-hour drive from Chennai, which is my husband's home city.
Wow. So do you know anything more about why? There's so many fascinating areas that I'd like to explore that you know, I don't really get a chance to do. So, you know, why is it, or what was the incentive for the owner of this factory in India to create these working standards? Because it's so easy to take advantage of people in India. What happened in this situation that created a much more kind and humane working environment?
Well, essentially demand. There are more and more businesses like myself who are demanding organic and ethically made products for their customers. I believe this particular manufacturer, one of the tipping points for them, several years ago, they got a contract to produce some garments for Disney, which they tell me was a massive thing for them. And so from there, they then were able to attract a certain level of business, and they were able to invest and make sure that they met these standards. I mean, I guess just for your background and for the background of your listeners, the very first factory manufacturer that we approached, the quotation that they gave us versus the quotation that this factory gave us in terms of the cost of production, it's fourfold. For the fact that we want our garments to be made organically and in a place where they are ethically made, it's essentially costing us more than four times as much than if we did what, unfortunately, far too many large companies do and go to a manufacturer who does not adhere to those standards. So, you know, it was a massive investment in cost for us, but it was something that we felt so strongly about that, I mean, we weren't going to do it any other way. That was clear from the get-go.
And it really is inspiring, Emily, that you have such values that you've been able to maintain in your business and be able to really be essentially proud that you have a product that is aligned to these important values that you hold. And you've created something amazing. So I want to talk about creating a startup business, which you have just done, but I just want to check, is there anything else you want to add about the growing of cotton, the cotton industry, the benefit of organic cotton? Is there any benefit to wearing organic cotton as opposed to wearing other forms of cotton?
Well, I mean, I think like you alluded to earlier, prior to welcoming me as a guest, I mean, what we put in our bodies as consumers, I just personally feel that's really important. I mean, as I told you, my two children I conceived due to IVF, and I was really fortunate to find an IVF specialist here in Australia who he's originally from Malaysia, and he has a background in not only IVF, but he's also very in tune with natural medicines, including Chinese medicine and acupuncture. And so when I was going through that process, he really emphasized to me how important it was to make sure that I was using natural medicines and acupuncture and removing certain toxins from my life in the process of undergoing IVF, because for him, he you know, what he said to me basically was, is this Chinese medicine and their beliefs in natural products. I mean, that is medicine that's thousands of years old. And so while he's obviously a conventional medicine doctor and strongly believes in science, he also sees the value in that. And so for me, that was actually initially where my interest in organics came from, and ensuring that I wasn't using products that had pesticides.
Wow, I think that's so amazing that you have found someone who had that training in the traditional medical model, but also was equally trained with the understanding of natural medicine and traditional Chinese medicine, which I think is the highest way to go when you are on this journey. You want to be able to support the body and optimize the possibility to, in your case, ovulate and to maintain a healthy pregnancy. That just makes sense, right? It's like blinding flash of the obvious, which unfortunately isn't done by most practitioners in IVF.
Yeah, and I mean, that is what actually drew me to this particular specialist, the fact that he was very holistic in his approach. Because, you know, as he said to me, like, it all starts with the egg. And so if I'm not producing eggs of a certain quality, there's only so much that science can do in a laboratory after that.
Yeah. Well, good for you, because you have two beautiful children. There's when we send out the archive show, there's a photo of you and your two gorgeous children. So what a blessing. What a blessing in your life. So let's talk about Rowdy Roo. And I do love that name. You said you named it after your youngest child, Rowdy, which is an interesting name in itself. You launched, so you're a journalist, your husband's a journalist, you really have no experience in being an entrepreneur as such with a product. How did this idea come about, and what did you learn? For those of us listening who may want to start our own little business, especially now because being online is kind of the place to be these days with businesses, what are some of the lessons that you learned about setting up a startup and keep it going and make it successful?
The number one thing is you cannot rush the process. You need to be very clear about your vision and your goal, and you can't take shortcuts to get there. I mean, the fact that we had these amazing designs ready to go, and we needed to really just wait and find that correct manufacturer to make them, that was a real lesson in patience for me. Because, you know, when you've got this fantastic idea, you just want to get going. You want to hit the ground running. You want to get it to market. But sometimes it's not that simple. Sometimes you need to invest that time. And so I would suggest to people that, yeah, you need to really, really think about what's important to you, and you need to not cut corners. The other thing is that you can't expect it to take off overnight. We launched last June, and, you know, at first upon our launch, we had a great uptake of sales, then things ticked along, and in the last couple of months, they've just, you know, we've really started to hit the ground running. And so for us, again, that was a bit of a lesson in patience. You need to build the trust, I think, of your consumers, because as I know you believe too, Dr. Cheryl, people are really making more conscious choices. They're more invested in the things that they're buying, and it's very easy to do research on the internet. And so if you're starting a business, you need to make sure that you know your target market and that you're communicating with your target market and you're telling them what you're delivering them and how hard you've worked to deliver it to them and why it is something that they need.
So I'm just curious, did you actually learn about marketing through social media? Did you take a course? How did you embark on using social media?
Well, as journalists, our industry has undergone immense change in recent years. For example, my entire career up until 12 months ago, all the stories I wrote went in a physical newspaper or magazine. However, for the past 12 months, the majority of the stories I've written have gone online only. And so we as journalists have been, our role has expanded. We're not just expected to write the story, we're then expected to promote it on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and get it out there to our audiences. So yeah, a lot of the lessons that I learned about social media, they came from my day job. And I think, so even though journalism and a baby clothing line do not exactly seem like they intertwine much, I think like with a lot of entrepreneurs, you do take the skills that you've picked up along the way and you do adapt them to the chosen business that you're launching.
Right. So I mean, you undertook a huge project, and there was obviously a tremendous amount of research. You had to, you know, cut through so much, you know, misinformation and the learning process. And I know you said, you know, your husband's uncle is in the organic cotton industry, so I'm sure that it was a huge leg up in this process. But it just takes so much commitment on your part to sift through all of the challenges and obstacles that you probably didn't even know were there when you decided to take on this new project in your life.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to lie. In the year between when we were ready to manufacture and when we actually finally started manufacturing, there were times where I thought we should just not do this. Because it was so hard. It was really so hard. Unless you are somebody who has a massive, massive mass orders to put in, some factories won't even look at you. It was definitely a process. And I guess a byproduct of that is we don't wholesale. So you can only buy Rowdy Roo through us. And that's because we have invested in our product and because the cost of manufacturing it is actually really high, quite high for us. We can't on sell that to anybody else because we would not make anything. So that was not what I was anticipating. I was anticipating that we would wholesale, that we would stock in boutiques and the like. But yes, there were lots of learnings along the way. There was some pivoting, as I think many people have done during the pandemic, but I'm really proud of what we've ended up with.
Well, it really is inspiring what you've created, and having a vision, starting with the vision, and then, you know, the journey that unfolded, right, and all the stops and starts and new directions that you hadn't anticipated, but you kept your vision and you made it happen. So why don't you share with my audience the products that you have, what you've created in Rowdy Brew. So we can inspire people, and if they're looking for unique gifts of organic cotton and Australiana, which are really unique and they're so adorable, people know where to go. So tell us more about what products you have on your website for sale.
So the debut collection, which is available now, is comprised of onesies. Perhaps you know them as zip suits or rompers, and also baby wraps or swaddles. Perhaps you know them as bunny rugs or baby blankets. There's all sorts of terminology for baby items. And so we have two designs. We have koalas and kangaroos, and they were actually hand-illustrated by my best friend from high school. She lives in far north Queensland. And we've got those four items currently on offer. Penny, our artist, her beautiful designs you can also purchase as art prints that you can hang in your child's bedroom or nursery. Our upcoming collection, which I'm very excited about, we're going to be launching in late March, is for older children. So the initial collection that we have now is from birth to 18 months. The new collection is from age 2 to 6, and we have a beautiful dress with koalas, a koala t-shirt, a kangaroo t-shirt. The kangaroo t-shirt is so cute. It's actually a joey in a pouch, and it's placed on the child's belly, so it looks like your little one is actually has a joey in their pouch. I love it. I think it's just adorable. And we also have a new design of baby wrap that's come out, all 100% organic cotton, ethically made, and, yeah, proudly designed and owned by Australians.
Well, I think those designs are adorable, and I love Australiana, and I love supporting Australiana. We've had previous interviews with Lauren Brisbane, who owns Q Camel, and she's here, and Queensland with her camel milk and camel milk products, which was really fun. And I love what you're doing with your organic cotton and your products. And I would imagine that people can order from you all over the world, right? You ship everywhere?
We do. We ship internationally and also domestically. We offer international flat rate shipping of $20 Australian, no matter where you're located. And let me tell you, we have sent Rowdy Brew items to some fairly far-flung locations. They're extremely popular as gifts. I'd say close to half of our orders are shipped internationally as gifts, and which I love, because then people send us photos of their little babies from Israel and Japan and France wearing these designs. The UK and the US are two of our biggest markets we send to, and I just love it. I love it so much.
Well, that must be so much fun to get those photos back of your Rowdy Brew designer outfits all over the world. So if we're bringing our conversation to a conclusion, Emily, is there anything else that you would like to share that we haven't touched on?
I just think that when you're buying something, you really need to, as a consumer, it's more and more important that we're just really informed about what we're buying. So I would just encourage people, have a look at the labels on your garments, go to the company's website, see where it was made, how it was made, what it was made from. I think sometimes people focus on things, for example, with an Australiana line where it is made, and we're very upfront about the fact that it is made in India and why it is made in India, because for us, we didn't want to compromise on the organics, and it was just simply, we were just simply unable to have them manufactured here because, as you said, there's a complete absence of organic cotton in Australia. So I just think don't give items a cursory glance. Really do your research. Really think about what you're buying and why you're buying it and the values that are important to you.
And support people like yourself who have really committed to the highest values in their work, and not just the product, but who's manufacturing it. I think that that's just inspiring, Emily, that you have every step of the way have aligned what you're doing with those values, and just really impressive and quite remarkable that you've created such a unique product on all levels and are doing really well with it. So if people want to find out or just check out the designs of Emily's line of baby products, onesies, and the T-shirts are coming in, I think you said the end of March, they will be available. If people want to learn about that line or the wall hangings, and the designs are fabulous. I do love kangaroos and koalas is so iconic, right? People can go to, and people should check out Rowdy Roo, and that's R-O-W-D-Y for Rowdy Roo, R-O-O.com.au, rowdyroo.com.au, and just see what Emily's created and all the love and passion that she has put into her business and trying to get something really special out there into the world. So, Emily, thank you for your time today. Thank you for the dedication you have to create your vision and make it happen. It must be so exciting for you to see this idea, this inception, and now it's actually come into manifestation.
Oh, it is. And Dr. Cheryl, can I tell you, as a small business owner, when you see orders come in, when you see the orders come in every day and you see people supporting you, you just do a little happy dance, because when you're supporting a small business owner, you're literally supporting somebody to help feed their family and to, you know, help send their little girl to swim class. You're not just supporting a corporation. So as a small business owner, I really thank everybody who buys from small businesses.
Well, I hope we've inspired people to come and check out Rowdy Roo and find their little baby gifts or gifts for their children or infants or family, friends, something really unique, something really wholesome and beautiful. So thank you for everything you've done. Thank you for your time today. It's been a great conversation, and I really appreciate what you've created, Emily, and I'm so happy I am able to get your message and your vision and your products out there into the world.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me, Cheryl. I've really enjoyed our conversation today.
It's an absolute pleasure. And we've been talking to Emily Ryan, and she is the founder of rowdyroo.com.au. I think you found the conversation pretty fascinating and learned a lot about cotton, I have, and about working in a sustainable way with the values that support every aspect of the development and manufacture of a product. It's been pretty interesting for me. And I just want to encourage you to come back every week and have a chance to listen to all of these inspiring conversations on What Women Must Know. And remember that there's another program called The Love Code that I also host every week, my spiritual side of me. And if you would like to stay in touch with me, then please either go over to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, like me there, or opt in to drcherylselman.com, and all of the archive shows will be available and emailed to you if you opt in, or just post it there on my Facebook page. So stay connected, stay in touch, and as always, I just want you to have a week filled with honoring the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.